welcome to another episode of Confessions of a Wee Timorous Bushy. This is your host, Menion, also known as Rob. Okay, so I'm about to record and discuss a little bit about the... Discuss a little bit, is that proper English? I'm going to talk about session 3 of the Greyhawk Pommage campaign that I'm currently running. Now, you're going to hear lots of sounds in the background, and that is because I'm making lunch. Why do we make lunch while making podcasts? Well, this is guerrilla podcasting at its finest, of course. Or perhaps not its finest, but it's an example of that kind of podcasting. We have had podcasts from the bathroom, you know, people in the bath. We've had podcasts. I do podcasts while walking. We've had podcasts while hiking. I think we'll get plenty of driving podcasts. Today is a sandwich making podcast, and there's been a lot of talk about sandwiches recently. So why not? This is my opportunity to get some time for podcasting and also to make my lunch, because it is a working day. I'm currently working at home. The reason for that, and hopefully the sound quality will be reasonable while I'm making my sandwich. I'm just putting a bag in my bag of tea. I'm making a cup of tea. I want to let that just percolate a little bit while I'm buttoning up my sandwiches. So, why are we talking about sandwiches? Well, we are, right? And so Greyhawk is really what you want to hear about. You don't want to hear about sandwiches, although I might give you a little bit of sandwich talk while we're doing that. Greyhawk, session 3, finally the game took off. So we'd done a lot of kind of pussyfooting around, talking about expectations, trying to pick up where the characters were, what they'd been doing, the training they'd undertaken, and more pointedly or poignantly or importantly, about how they were developing as now higher level characters. We have a party of five characters, I guess. Five characters, that's about right. We have Kovic the Ranger, human ranger. They're all humans except for the thief, and I'll get on to him soon. We have Kovic the Ranger. And Kovic is an interesting character, but very rarely displays what I would call good aligned behavior. He's kind of a whimsical kind of character. And I'm not sure if he's really that kind of charitable defender of civilization that is what you would expect from the behavior of a ranger in order to maintain that class. Now, remember, we're talking about Advanced Dungeons and Dragons first edition. We're not talking about the rangers from any other edition. And the ranger is very specific in that edition. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but think of it as a kind of guardian or knight that operates in the wilderness, protects people, halflings, hobbits, humans. Very much like Aragorn and the Rangers of the North in Tolkien, from the dangers of the outside world, so that they don't have to worry about it. So they are very... they're a very good and charitable people, and they're not supposed to keep money. And this is another issue that we have in the party, is that party treasure means that there's an out, there's a way for the ranger character to avoid that limitation, that restriction. And that has often had me having chats with players and trying to negotiate this, because restrictions are important. You know, the restrictions are important in first edition. It's part of the game. Working that into your character, working around that, with that, to give it flavour, to really bring out the flavour of the edition. It's one of the things that, you know, differentiates it from the other editions, right? So, well, that's a different debate, really. But so we've got Kovic. It's going to take a long time if I mention each character in detail and all the obstacles we've had over the years. Kovic is a 7th level human ranger. We have Pelsteer, the elf thief. Pelsteer is now 9th level. Well, non-Pelsteer. We have Kalgan, the human cleric, who is a cleric of Pelor. And is, I think, 8th level now. Pretty amazing. We have... Oh, yeah, we have Vrax, who is a 6th or 7th level magic user, but was originally an illusionist, then got up to 5th level, I'd like to say, 5th level. So they dual-classed into magic user because they thought that that would give them more kind of oomph. The player of Vrax is now gone on hiatus, so he's actually left the game temporarily as of this, or just prior to this session that I'm discussing now. That's 4 characters. The 5th character, played by our newer player Jez, is a 1st level druid. Okay, so yeah, I've had him start first level, as I've kind of discussed in the previous episode of this podcast. Now, they all started in the inn, in the tavern, the Blood on the Vine tavern. And I need to get back my sandwiches. I'm getting distracted by podcasting from my sandwich making. Now, the Blood on the Vine is the tavern, the only tavern in Barovia, which is a town and a domain that has until recently been cut off in my campaign world, has been cut off from the rest of the Pomarge. But now with the fully deaf death of Strahd, it is no longer cut off and is now open to the more mundane evils of the world, particularly marauding hobgoblins and orcs and what have you. So that's the next thing that they're facing. So they meet in the tavern, they're catching up. Some of these guys, their characters have been away, trudging back to their town where they have their own kind of hideout. And they also own a mirror of mental prowess, which allows them to open gates, among other things. Now, so they have a means now to, as long as they maintain this gate connection, they're able to move between current residence in Barovia and their hideaway, their hangout in just on the outskirts of Homlet. All right, that makes it very interesting. They're getting high level, so I think these kind of items really add a lot of flavor. Now, that item actually was grabbed back in the Temple of Elemental Evil a long time ago now, a few years ago in real time. So there they are. We have a new player. They're all there. They're deciding what to do. I've given them various options. It's all on the table. They are partway through the slavers. The Slave Lord's campaign, roughly. But we're not locked into modules anymore. And something I really want to stress for me, and I hope for the players, that a degree of freedom in the campaign really makes it more interesting, you know, that it's not locked into that published module, that the module is a guideline. Well, we'll see how that really works out. At the moment, it seems to be working out very well. So they decided, there's a few issues going on. So as I previously stated, I think in the last episode, there are tensions between the different factions currently residing in Barovia. That's the original residents that have been freed from the curse of Strahd by the party. We have the emancipated slaves. That's probably not the right word, but freed slaves, that's probably more correct. That the party helped flee from the hobgoblins of the slaver's stockade. And we also have another group, which is the Vistani. Or it was originally they would call them the gypsies, and we're going to call them the travelling people, the travellers. for the sake of not necessarily political correctness, but just to remove some of the implications of the wording, the real world, the real world terms, particularly Vastani. No, not Vastani, because that's made up. But you know, we don't really need that kind of complicated word, and we don't need necessarily words like Gypsy or Roma or anything else, because again, these are terms from our own world, and they are not cognate. Is that the right thing? They do not directly represent the same thing in Greyhawk. So I wanted to sever that link. We kind of seem to have decided to sever that link anyway in the last session, and just call them travelers. So we've got these three different factions. They're all a little bit unhappy with each other, for reasons already mentioned, but and ones that you can kind of guess. Now, some of this unhappiness, as the party kind of delved into it, reveals some things that are going on, some events that have happened, and some mystery, a bit of a mystery, some pressing tasks like the opening up of the trails to the east down to the Jewel River in order to improve trade, to bring in much needed resources, food and so on, so that the people can really make it through the summer up until the next harvest, as the increased population due to the freed slaves is putting a bit of pressure on the town. It's not all bad news, but there's a lot of bad news, and I'm probably mostly going to focus on that in this recap. Now, one thing they found out was that there's been a bit of a the connection between the trader, whose name eludes me at the moment, and the traveling people has worsened. Now, they originally had a bit of a deal going on, allowed by Strahd to bring in goods, and have this gave the trader a monopoly. He's not, you know, he's overcharging for goods. The party aren't too pleased with him, but they want him on their side because he's the man to do the job, right? Everybody has a role, whether you like it or not. So they find out Vistani, we're finding out that the trader is suddenly not that great, on great terms with the traveling people. The traveling people are upset with the trader and some others. So they basically, you know, go and have a little nosy around. They go to the trader's place, find out that some traveling woman, a young lady, robbed apparently his shop. The gypsies were just saying that, Christ, there we go again. The traveling people, it's going to take a while, you know, please bear with me. The traveling people are saying that they're blaming it on the townsfolk, but that, the problems between the people. The trader says that the travelers have stolen from him. So they go, they say, look, we'll look into this. If you can try and promise to help rebuild the town and open up, reduce your prices where possible, open up the markets and help us rebuild, right? I've said that twice. The party then goes to Madame Eva, I believe her name is, who is the leader of the travelers. And it turns out that indeed one of their people is missing. And they think she is being kidnapped, or in fact, Madame Eva believes that she was killed by a townsperson. Now, it's unclear at this stage whether it has anything to do with the trader, whether the trader's actually killed the thief. you know, as a form of retribution, or what, or sorry, I'm making my sandwich here. or what, right? So they find out some guy with red hair, and so they inquire around, and they find there's only two people with red hair, one a man, one a woman. The man, after they discuss this with the new Burgermeister, Ismark, I believe his name is, they find that his name, they discover his name, and that he lives with his sister, who, surprise, surprise, also has red hair. They decide to go and talk to her. They discover then that she hasn't seen her brother. He's been away in the up north in the by that lake. There's a big lake, Trout Lake, where there's a lodge where the fishermen sort of live, basically, until they've caught enough fish. They sometimes bring them fresh, but usually they bring them smoked or otherwise prepared. She's not seen him. She's aware that he was hanging around with this traveling woman, a beautiful traveling woman. So you can see they're starting to follow leads. Now, I hadn't hammered out all of these leads. I'd made some various connections between some characters. And depending who the players went to talk to, the story would be kind of presented differently, although the facts would remain the same, if that makes any sense. It's a kind of, so it worked out to be kind of open-ended mystery that didn't need to be solved, but the party decided to go and solve it anyway, right? They thought, rather than going investigating the problems with the roads to the east that are preventing the travelers from getting through to the Jewel River, investigating tales of monsters, maybe hobgoblins on the road, they decide to follow this up and try to improve relations amongst the different peoples in the town. Anyway, long story short, they travel up to the lodge. It takes them about a day with all their equipment, without horses. And by the time they're getting there, I don't think it started snowing. See, I've prepared the weather as well. If you've got a druid, you need to know a little about how the weather is going to pan out. And I was using Into the Wild supplement to develop the weather, you know, very simply. But it was decent enough, and it seemed quite consistent, and the changes were believable. So I was quite happy with that. They find this lodge. It's kind of protected, defended. It's got like nails hammered into the door, into the shutters. The shutters are closed. There's people inside, but they find that three of the fishermen, did I say hunters? They're fishermen. Three of the fishermen have since died. Something has got them. They inquire about the man with red hair and the missing traveling woman. They, if I recall, they did see the man, but he and he had some business, but he, after going, you know, he kind of went missing, basically, and they found the rowboat was out on the island in the middle of the lake, and they're unable to get to it, trying to fish in you know, the subsequent days. Some of the fishermen just died mysteriously, just disappeared. Now, they spend the evening there. They talk about kind of like scoping out the lake at night. But a heavy snowstorm sets in. Remember, this is up in the hills. It's still wintertime. So that they decide to call off that plan. Now, you know, the weather, I'm not making it up. I'm not channeling them anywhere. This is all kind of randomized. It's people, we've had discussions recently about the how random generators are not real stories, and it's a cop-out. But what the random generators do, and what these people do not really appreciate, is that they remove certain temptations or powers away from the DM. They introduce a random element that then creates a environment that the players have to adapt themselves around, and so does the GM. And that's exciting. because they're being restricted by the circumstances, but not by the DM. Okay, I'll leave it at that for now. Anyway, the next day they decide to try and get the boat. They happen to have, yes, and it's a high-level party. They've got an ebony fly. It's a figurine. So they've got this magical figurine, ebony fly. They use it to get out to the island. Just making sure I've got everything, my sandwiches, ham, cheese, gherkins. I just need to put some lettuce on top and I'm ready to put it together. This is taking way longer than it should. Now, let's get away some of the stuff. Tidying up, rattle. So the ranger jumps on the ebony fly. He flies out to the island. He finds that there's no tracks in the snow. Now, they had just found tracks circling around the lodge in the snow. They found these tracks and then going back to and from the water. No other tracks anywhere. No animal tracks, very strangely. No animal tracks in the snow anywhere. The place is deadly quiet. On the island, as I just said, there's no tracks around the boat. The boat has been left for days, apparently. There's no sign of life on the island. He doesn't explore that. So the ranger, Kovic the ranger, so he takes the boat. He allows his fly to fly overhead, buzz overhead while he's paddling. He's rowing the boat. And he gets about halfway across the lake back to the party, and unfortunately, again chance, he is attacked by a creature. Now, nobody knows what the creature is. Is this freaking lettuce? It is. I'm so ignorant. It's romaine lettuce. Sorry, it's just different from the usual lettuce, and I just want. We get some unusual veggies here, and I was just making sure it wasn't something I have to boil up. No, this looks okay for the sandwich. Give it a bit of fibre. Magic. Here we are. Now, once this is in, just gonna cut it, and we'll be going. We'll be eating. That's what it's about. Well, okay. So where was I? Yeah, so he gets attacked. Now, okay, the party still don't know what, they haven't connected all the dots, and that's fine, because not everything has to be laid out straight for everybody to know. We've talked about this a little bit in recent episodes about, what's the term, exposition or info dumps and stuff. You know, sometimes things happen and you just don't know why, and that's fine. That's a realistic, believable world. It doesn't have to be presented like, oh, and this happened because of this, and then you explain the story. Sometimes stuff happens. There is a reason why it happens, but it doesn't have to be disclosed. Life ain't like that, right? And I think that brings a bit of frustration to some people, but hopefully, more often, it brings a kind of verite, is that the right word? Believability to the campaign, that stuff is happening, and it's not always clear why it's happening. And I think that's very different from what happened in the Dark Sun, where they uncovered information through clever procedures, clever talk, maneuvering. Very different. So yeah, they're attacked by this. The ranger is attacked in the boat. This woman, basically, soaked with bright green eyes and black hair, matching the description actually of the missing traveling woman. All right, great. So at least we've got a connection now. She grabs him with her long nailed hands and tries to pull him into the water, drag him into the water to drown him. Yeah, he's wrestling with her. She is cold and her skin is pale as the grave. He draws his sword. He manages to draw his sword, his sunblade, and it glows a brilliant blue, indicating that this is a creature of the undead. And he starts hacking at it, right? So he's out there, but he's in a very precarious situation, because although he is a very accomplished warrior. He's a 7th level ranger. He doesn't know what he's up against. He doesn't know what he's fighting. And this thing is trying to drown him. He's in full plate. If she topples him into the lake, he's going to drown. And he's got maybe a couple of rounds before he's dead.
Oh, that's interesting. I just got cut off. I got a call and then it automatically cut off at a certain point. So that's fine. I thought I was going to have to go back and delete my conversation on the phone or something like that. But that's cool. Okay, so I'm eating the sandwich now. How is this for like exciting podcasting? I've got my gherkin and romaine lettuce and ham salad with, I don't know, like some kind of Dijon mustard or something. Well, that's the sandwich section over. But we did leave our ranger stranded. Basically, yeah, the ranger's hacking at her. And he starts to think, well, she could drown me. So he's playing with the idea, the player is playing with the idea of actually jumping on, trying to escape by getting onto the fly. There's a slight chance if he loses initiative when he's trying to retreat that the creature will actually get a free attack on him, this undead woman. He decides not to risk it and he presses the attack and he actually finishes her off. This sword that he's wielding is actually doing extra damage. It's extra magical against undead creatures. So he defeats the creature who is now fully dead and her eyes return to the natural blue that they had discovered were, you know, originally, you know, kind of quite notable features of this woman when they were out looking for her. So they now have the body of the missing woman. They know that she went missing with the man. They find the man's body. They do using their magics. And I kind of have to wrap up the story a little bit because we're coming to the end of the 3-hour session. Not that we're doing one time. Yep, that's a thing at the moment, apparently. Not that, but just to keep things tight, really. Want to wrap it up. So they discover they use locate item and some other spells that they have at their disposal, as well as more mundane means to discover the bodies of the missing fishermen. They find the body of the man. It's clear that he has been drowned as well by the woman. So something has happened to turn this woman into undead. Presumably she was killed. They also find a small shrine on the island dedicated to the name eludes me at the moment, but it dedicated to a deity of lakes, water, springs and so on. But it's been defiled. And there's a symbol that resembles a goat's head in dried blood etched on the shrine stone. So they wash that. They try to restore the shrine and the island and fishermen. And they return the bodies to Barovia. And that's where we basically finished the story. They declined. There was a treasure involved as well, the missing treasure. I think I mentioned that. Now this is returned to the trader on without need for reward, provided that the trader continues to cooperate and help the efforts to rebuild the town of Barovia and work with the other factions. And that's where we left off. So the whole thing went rather well, I think. As you can probably guess, the materials are largely my own that are worked into the circumstances that the adventurers find themselves in. It was a bit of mystery. I don't think I led them on a wild goose chase. I think that they asked questions that then required answers that then pointed them in the direction that they were looking to go. And all in all, I was quite happy with the adventure because I had to evolve, I had to develop the story as I was going. And the players had to think of, they were thinking of what they wanted to do, how they were going to do it. And I was merely judging whether their methods were you know, successful, were sufficient or not, or whether they'd required something else. But there's all, you know, there were a lot of clues along the way. Lots of people had little fragments of information. So they got to where they wanted to go, and they you know, uncovered parts of a puzzle. It looks like the couple had stolen the treasure from the trader. And then there'd been some kind of falling out, resulting ultimately in the undeath of the woman and the death of the man at her hands, at the undead woman's hands. So we have a bit of a mystery still unsolved, but generally everything is kind of laid clear that there was something a little bit nefarious going on that turned various groups against each other in subtle ways. Next, it'll be interesting to see what the party decides to do, because, I mean, they have this problem with the trade routes to the east. They also have problems with, they're trying to build up a kind of militia, an effective militia and some kind of defences against outsiders. They also have a castle that is still haunted with undead, despite the destruction of Strahd. So there's many different directions they'll go in, could go in. I suspect they're going to try to find out a little bit more about the road and what is causing trouble with the travelers, these bandits or hobgoblins or whatever they are. So that could be the next part of the adventure. Whoever, how far they investigate that, to what degree, how they decide to solve the issues that they come up against is for them to decide, really, and for me to kind of arbitrate. So I'm quite excited about this. I'm not going to reveal too much. I do have things prepared, obviously, but I don't want to reveal too much, and I don't want to cast it in iron. I don't want to etch it too deeply, because I want them to be, I don't want it to be something they must do. I think it's important to keep it kind of fluid around what they feel is right to do at the time. So that is the end of this recap. Thank you so much for bearing with me as I've made my sandwich and the different sound quality issues that you may have faced or we have faced along the way. The single call-in for this episode is from Jason of Nerds RPG Variety Cast. Take it away, Jason.
Hey, Jason here. Just listened to Free Will's Player Agency. Interesting episode, some great calls. I do disagree with Joe. I don't think having an omnipotent being negates free will at all. Just because that being knows what choice you're going to make doesn't change the fact you have the choice to make that. You know, when you have a small child or even an older child or whatever, and you know them and you kind of know what choice they're going to make, when you give them a choice, what do you want to order for lunch? What do you want for lunch? You know, you might know they're going to say peanut butter and jelly, but and they might very well say that, but that doesn't remove their choice of saying peanut butter and jelly, you know? Omnipotent being, unless they're influencing the decision you make, doesn't change your free will to make that. And in fact, it's much sadder because, you know, think about it. As an adult, you have a child, and if you know every choice your child's going to make throughout life, that doesn't change that child having the ability to make those choices. But depending on how successful they choose and what decisions they make throughout the life, that could be a very painful thing to know, knowing that they're going to fail. Or it could be a good thing, knowing they're going to succeed. but knowing ahead of time they're going to make bad choices and having to watch them make those bad choices, think how hard that must be. But it doesn't change the fact they can make those bad choices. And it kind of goes to what you were talking about throwing things out on the table as the DM to give the player options so they can weave the campaign together. It goes back to what Daniel Norton over at Bandit's Keep talks about sometimes. You want to give the players more threads and more choices, more story hooks than they can actively tackle. So they're going to have to choose to ignore some threads. You know, they're going to have to let some things fall by the wayside. And by the time they have time in game to go back and pick those things up, the story's moved on. So maybe that dungeon they didn't clear, they decided to skip to go do something else. Maybe another party's already cleared that dungeon now and they've lost that opportunity. Or maybe that little girl the father wants you to help find, when you come back the next day because you finished doing the previous mission before you helped, maybe that's when you find out the father found what was left of her after the wolves finished, right? So you put enough choices in front of the players where they have to pick some, but they can't pick all of them. And what they don't pick, there are going to be consequences. And, you know, that gives them that free will and lets those players weave that campaign. And it makes it that much more bittersweet knowing, you as the DM knowing that, you know, they're going to have to face those heartbreaks of what they missed out on. As opposed to where you give them hooks, but really there's no negative to them not taking those hooks. Or you know what hook they're going to take because you give them obvious choices. So by giving them those numerous hooks, you're giving them that free will and letting them weave that campaign together. So, yeah, great stuff, and I look forward to your next show. Take care.
Well, Jason, thank you so much for that call-in. That's really kind of put everything in place for me in some ways. I've been kind of, you could probably tell I've been sort of stumbling towards similar conclusions, thoughts, but it's not always very easy for me to put them in a manner that is clearly understandable to other people, and I think you've done that very well there. So lots of points there, really. The first one, really, when you're talking about a higher being, a supreme being, a god, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The idea of free will does not exclude the idea of a supreme being. And I think your example of a parent, no matter how badly that might rub Joe or others up the wrong way, probably myself too, it also is a very good example. It's a good analogy. Yeah, if you're a parent, yeah, you do see these things coming. You can see it coming. It's very frustrating watching children make bad decisions. But if you take control, if you exert your control over the child, then, yeah, you've stolen that decision away from the child. You've prevented them from arriving at a path that can lead them to greater insight into their own actions and others. And you've become a tyrant, but by giving them the option to arrive at a similar state of enlightenment, if you like, then you're actually sharing as an adult, as a supreme being, Jason, you're sharing that wisdom, you're sharing that control with those that really don't deserve that level of power yet. But by giving them the options, the small steps, you're allowing them to tread on the path that leads to a greater wisdom and the right to greater control of their lives, if you like. Wow, that's a big topic, isn't it? That's a big topic, and it's really sort of one that is bigger than the role-playing hobby, but it does, as you can see, hopefully, it does have a bearing, a very important bearing on the topic because of player agency and what we do as DMs, which is a, you know, effectively a very authoritarian position and one open to abuse. So what are the tools that we can use to move away from that authoritarian role? Well, we create a world, an illusion for people to play with, so it's enjoyable, right? And we may introduce random elements to limit the influence of that one ego on the game. And we bring in choices that can be rejected or accepted. But as you say, and this is probably the other major takeaway I've got from your call-in, and perhaps others will have other points, but the other big takeaway is, as you're saying, if they can't necessarily take all the options on the table, and by accepting some but rejecting others, they are then, they've got to live with the consequence of those choices, which is, yeah, it's bittersweet, but it's interesting and exciting, and that interesting part is obviously an important part for the game. Right, and I think that's something I really want to continue to develop in my gaming. Maybe it's still quite underplayed in my games, but having multiple choices, and by accepting or rejecting those choices, it doesn't eliminate what they didn't accept, right? It changes what they didn't accept. There's consequences, aren't there, based on those choices. So yeah, very, very interesting. I'm going to leave it there and we'll come back to that, and hopefully other people will pick up on what you've said. Thank you. Well, there you go. Two episodes in, less than 2 days. That's not bad for me. That's saying, having been said, it did take me over a month to get the first of those two episodes out. So I guess you can't really say I'm being highly productive. So today's episode, this current episode, is really bringing me up to date. That's the third session recap for the Greyhawk Pommard campaign that I've been running, with my friends, my face-to-face group. And yeah, that's it. And a really nice call from Jason of Nerds RPG Variety Cast. Thank you to Jason for teasing out some of the ideas that I've been thinking of. And I think it dovetails very nicely with the third session recap in this same episode. So that's quite prescient of Jason to have called in time. So tomorrow I'm off on holiday. It's the first holiday I've been on with my wife for something like 5 years. We're going down to Miyakojima, which is a island in the Ryukyu archipelago, which is a huge archipelago, but it's in the Okinawa Ryukyu archipelago. The main island chains there are the Okinawan islands, which are actually, there are three, four different island chains that make up that area. So we're going to the island. If you get in the car, it'll take you about, these islands actually, there's four or five islands. A main island and a couple of smaller ones. They're all linked mostly, except for one, by bridges now. Some very amazing pieces of engineering from what I can see. It takes up to about 4 hours to go around the coast of all of those islands. So it's quite a small piece of land. We're just down there for 4 days, 3 nights. Hopefully it'll be nice and relaxing. I hear the temperature is a nice 25 degrees down there. So it should be, hopefully it's not a system shock, because it's been a little bit cold up here in Kyoto. Looking forward to the food and the alcohol. I have to be careful because I
broke my toe about 2 weeks ago. I don't know how I broke my toe, which kind of explains in some ways how I did it. I'll leave that to your imagination. But broke it, I did. I can walk, I can sort of hobble around now. The bruising has all gone down, or at least it's just black marks now. But I've just got to be careful not to hit my toes against anything. Otherwise, I risk a complicated or complex fracture, a full break, in fact, and that would require surgery to fix. It's not something I want to go through. So I'll be sitting in the car most of the time, and my wife will be driving around, and that's fine by me. I just want to relax and enjoy the colours, the green of the hills and the blue of the ocean, or sometimes the green of the ocean and the blue of the hills. Actually, I don't know if there are that many hills. Maybe I'm wrong here. I think it's actually Miyako-jima is uncharacteristically flat. But anyway, greens and blues, lots of them, turquoises and stuff. That's Okinawa to a T. So I'm looking forward to the sea. Can't really go into it, but I'll be enjoying it from outside, and it's so clear. Hopefully, I'll be able to see some nice fish and some turtles and so on. I might even, podcast a little, might record a little piece about while I'm down there. But you don't really need to know that, do you? So that's this episode finished. I'll be back, I'm sure, in no time at all. Probably, I say, but you never know with me. Thank you so much for listening, and take care of yourselves. Enjoy your gaming, and I hope to hear from you all soon. Bye bye now.